I'm Josh Durso for FingerLakes1.com, and this is your Sunday Conversation. This week, we're catching up with Maureen Bellatori, the founder and CEO of 29 Design Studio in Geneva. The marketing and design firm has been growing in profile over the last few years, and we thought it would be cool to talk with Maureen about the state of marketing, what's new at 29 Design Studio, and what might come next for marketing after the pandemic. It was a lot of fun because we got into the weeds a bit, talking about a topic that we all interact with on a daily basis, even if just passively so. And marketing at its core is actually a really, really interesting topic since we are such a commercially driven society. Before we get into the interview, though, a quick ask for our listeners. If you enjoy the show, follow the link we dropped in the show notes and story on fingerlakes1.com to leave us a review. Those help new listeners find the show. And you can also support what we're doing here over at Patreon. Just visit www.patreon.com/FL1. Whether it's conversations like this one or the journalism Fingerlakes 1 readers expect, none of it is free, and for us to continue providing that, we definitely need your support. All right, now, enjoy today's Sunday conversation with Maureen Bellatori. Talk to us a little bit about the recognition that you guys received here. Best virtual event, best social media campaign, best company-funded public relations campaign. Did I miss any? seems like there was quite a list.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we're very excited about those, particularly because they came from the National Agri-Marketing Association. And that's a new focus for us. About a year ago now, last March, we made that pivot to focus in food, beverage, and agriculture. And so to enter a competition that is focused on awards in that industry for the first time ever that we've ever entered, we entered four categories and we won every single thing that we entered, three of which took home the first place prize. So it was so incredibly exciting and wild and affirming, right? To hear and see and be recognized for the work that we're doing in an industry we're so passionate about.
What went into that decision to make that jump, to pivot, as you say? Was it the pandemic? Was it something you were thinking about before the pandemic? What was that process like?
We were definitely far along that train ride by the time the pandemic struck. So it was something that I had always had an interest in, food, beverage, and agriculture. And many factors kind of all fell into place at the same time in late 2019 that made me decide for sure this is the path that we're going and there is no other choice. And so one of them is from way back from when I was, you know, a kid. I grew up on a dairy farm. So I have, you know, deep rooted experience in the industry. I married a chef. That was happenstance. That wasn't intentional, just a nice, sweet bonus. and then in late 2019, we helped Real Eats take home a $1 million grand prize in the Grow New York competition. And it was when I was walking the floor at that awards show and seeing other people who were claiming an expertise in the industry that made me realize there is no better expert than me and my team in this because of our, you know, deep rooted experience. And it goes beyond me. We have other members of our team that have experience in agricultural economic development and brands like Starbucks and, you know, all sorts of experience across food, beverage, and agriculture that made me finally get that confidence that we needed to know that was the right path for us.
I'm curious, was there like a bit of a calming or like stabilizing element in terms of like picking basically a smaller arena and sort of focusing on that, especially with how chaotic like everything in life turned out to be last year?
Yeah, last year was, I would definitely say chaos over calm for 2020. Across the board for sure. But once we made that decision, and I say we, cause it's, you know, we're a team. This is a very collaborative team and agency very intentionally. And so when we, as a team agreed and decided that was the right direction for us, you know, we were ready to announce that focus in March and the pandemic struck and we had a tough couple months, just like everyone did, you know, where it was really chaotic and really challenging. And then when we continued, like we always have, to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and, you know, continue on and make progress in that direction with that newfound focus, it absolutely helped us hone in on the types of clients that we wanted to work with and be able to secure the clients that we wanted to work with. And so since then, we've been able to, you know, we've done some work with Wegmans, we've done Monk's Bread, we've worked with who else? We read just a number. I don't want to rattle anything off that is still in prospect. So we've been able to work with a number of local, regional, national brands in that industry, and it's been so exciting.
That's awesome. I'm curious, best virtual event. Was that a category that existed before the pandemic?
I'm not sure because this is our first year, but that was a great one. Alfresco FLX Summit started at the Ramada here in Geneva and then went virtual. The Canandaigua Chamber puts that one on. It went virtual for the first time last year. And so we headline sponsored that event and then helped them carry through how are we going to transition this. And it was a wonderful collaborative solution with the Canandaigua Chamber and their executive director, Ethan Fogg, to, you know, collectively come up with something that was going to be really stand out. And one of the things that made that event so special was that Ethan was, he was, you know, really pioneering one of the first hybrid solutions where he was on site at New York Kitchen. And then most of the rest of the event was online. So it was this really wonderful, you know, mix of in-person elements and online elements with Ethan being on site, you know, more of like talk show style, MC style for the way that he was putting that on. And we curated these wonderful boxes of FLX, you know, goods that all went out to attendees for the event. So it was a really nice way to break the mold of what people by June were really tired of just sitting on Zoom all day. It was this wonderful hybrid experience.
Yeah. When you think about that, that transition to the food and the ag focus, what do you think about the region and what role the region has played in sort of connecting those two elements, which maybe weren't that well connected before, at least in sort of general, thought, because it seems like this region in particular has done really big things with the farm to table and the different sort of elements of ag that have been able to be incorporated into the food and beverage product that people actually experience here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of economic development, and I think you are too, you know, in all of the many factors that go into our day-to-day lives that we don't realize, you know, how economic development has such a huge role in commerce, you know, that affects our community and the way that we live. So, you know, the food movement in Geneva is certainly something that has impacted our area. And then expanding on that, Geneva in particular, of course, with the food scene. So, you know, pulling economic development into it and some of the initiatives that have made a huge difference in food, beverage, and agriculture in upstate New York, you've got starting, you know, some more local resources. You've got the city of Geneva has a specific focus in attracting food, beverage, and agriculture brands to the area. You've got the Cornell Center of Excellence at Cornell Agritech that is supporting the growth and, you know, and placement of food, beverage, and agriculture brands in this area. Now you've got the Grow New York competition, which is incentivizing companies to come to this area with $3 million in award prizes every single year. And they committed to a 3-year run of that contest, which has drawn applications from around the world. I mean, with Real Eats being our local hero that won the first year, last year's big winner, Seuss Technology out of Israel, you know, working on establishing their roots in the region. So I think that's why that moment walking the floor at Grow New York with my knowledge in economic development, my agency's expertise in marketing, branding, and amplification and growth of those opportunities, it was that realization that we were the missing piece that we needed, that the industry needed in this area to be able to continue to rise. Because and then, you know, the other factor that goes that I haven't mentioned, but is an essential factor is we've got the Finger Lakes and incredibly rich agricultural land going all the way back to the dairy farm I grew up on that makes upstate New York like no other place to grow a food and ag brand here.
So let's talk a little bit about the marketing side of things. I think it was around the middle of last year. I think it was the summer. Obviously, we were kind of in the middle of the pandemic. How is marketing and even design and maybe some of the elements that go into that evolved over the last year because of the pandemic? Or what kind of things have changed?
One of the trends that's changed in the agriculture industry as a whole is consumers care more about health-focused, you know, and health-focused products more than ever. They want to eat food that they know is good for them. They want to know where their food comes from, which was a rising trend, you know, for a long time. But that whole natural element of, I don't want any of the crap in the food that I eat, again, rising trend, but, you know, took a rocket ship to the moon when the pandemic struck. The other thing too is there has been a real connection back to supporting your neighbor and, you know, buying local, you know, and all of those sorts of things that also relate to knowing where your food comes from. But there was a coming together and a community unification that I think happened across the entire United States when the pandemic struck and everyone goes back into their homes and, you know, now is realizing that they have more of a local impact than they thought when their, you know, when their grocery store shelves were empty. I think there was a huge realization in food when people saw that, and really it exposed the fragility of some of our food systems. And so, you know, we're fortunate that the industry that we chose to focus in is one that needed that support when the pandemic struck. You know, some, you know, restaurants are still incredibly struggling. And if there's anything, one thing that everyone does after listening to this, you know, is go and support your local coffee shop, deli, you know, take out a meal if you're not comfortable dining out yet. But there was definitely a big back to your roots, back to your home, back to your community mentality that I think was a beautiful thing that happened from COVID.
Does it feel like, and this is something that I feel like I've noticed, people seem to be a little more aware of chain versus actual local now. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that, or am I just going crazy here?
No, I think that's connected too to the point that I just made about, you know, people want to support their neighbor, that there is a rise of artisanal. And it's something that you see in an economic downturn because it starts to level the playing field. Yesterday I was mentoring the students at the HWS Entrepreneurial Studies program. Every semester I teach them, I come in guest lecture for a class and teach them marketing. And that was one of the points that I made in that discussion is, you know, it's how some of the big brands launched. Major economic downturn, you know, somebody who was a big industry leader that was the big behemoth in the room that's got a lot of baggage that they're carrying along with them. All of a sudden, economic downturn, things that they were, you know, assuming crashed. And now some of their basic day-to-day is no longer running how they thought it was going to. And that's, I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm saying that that does give an opportunity to the young, nimble, fresh company with a new idea, that artisanal brand, that industry disruptor that gives them an opportunity now to, you know, break in, mm-hmm. which is exactly where, you know, our expertise, branding and marketing comes in to find out how do you do that? Where do you fit in? How can you claim some of that market share that is available?
So you talked a few minutes ago about some of the wellness and health and sort of focus on those kinds of products and how that's grown. Mm-hmm. I'm curious. It seems I hear a lot, and I don't know if this is just the way these types of studies are marketed or what, but seems like there is a growing portion of the consumer population that wants honest marketing. Mm-hmm. And if you look at marketing across the board, it's difficult to even tell what is honest versus what isn't honest.
Yeah.
But as someone who is literally in that space, mm-hmm. I'm curious, what are the things you look for, or what are the things that are sort of like, you know, set off either alarms or, mm-hmm. or positive marks as, you know, good versus bad?
Yeah. People absolutely want that authenticity, and they want, people feel more connected to a brand when they know there's no bullshit. It's why Dollar Shave Club could steal, you know, business, a significant amount of business from Gillette razors, right? Because they said, we're going to go this route, you know, and it was this whole no bullshit mentality. And so the other thing too about social media and the rising, you know, popularity of social media platforms and the exodus from some of the big platforms with the pandemic, you know, there's a lot that changed there too in terms of human behaviors. People are spending more time on social media, but there's also, you know, behaviors that are changing too because of the content that's ending up on the platform that you once loved, right? So Facebook used to be kind of the only game in town way back when, right? And then Instagram comes in, this big disruptor. Facebook buys Instagram. Now they're the same, you know, they're cut from the same cloth. It's the same thing going on. So Snapchat comes along, you know, they're the big raw, real, show me more of the limited, but like, I want that on demand type thing. And then, you know, now TikTok is the major industry disruptor that's happening in, you know, digital marketing right now. And why people love it is because it's that quick, fast, it's raw, it's real. I want to see it straight from your phone. Don't give me that overpolished stuff that's, you know, retouched and all of that stuff. And there's a whole movement on that entire platform of, let's stop with the photo filters. Let's start, you know, showing what real bodies look like. All of that stuff is definitely not going away. And that definitely relates back to what you were just saying about the consumer wanting to see more of that. Stop giving me the over edited stuff. I just want, give it to me straight, you know, and that authenticity is here to stay.
And to that end, when you think about the big players right now, in terms of not just marketing, but in terms of, you know, sort of digital advertising and that sort of stuff, Facebook, Amazon, Google, Instagram, throw TikTok in there now because they're sort of established. What comes to mind when you start to think about the next 3 to 5 years in terms of the marketing and advertising landscape?
That's an excellent question. I think that for anything, it really comes back to knowing who your customer is. And so your platform of choice for your brand is going to continue to morph. I mean, the new guy on the street is Clubhouse, which is more of an audio only platform, which is highly interesting too. You know, it was photo and then it was video and now it's audio only too. So the most important thing always previously, and which will continue, is you have to know who your customer is, and that platform is going to change. Print is still a viable, you know, option, and out of home billboards when you're, you know, driving down the street, driving through your neighborhood, not your neighborhood, but the place that you drive through to get to your neighborhood for most people out in our rural parts. But social media, you know, email, all of those platforms are just part of the mix. And so, you know, none of that is going to change. It's going to be even more important to continue to diversify, because I think one of the things that TikTok and Clubhouse and some of these more, you know, newer platforms are showing us is that it doesn't take much for a new thing to catch fire and become the most popular thing in town. So in terms of advice that I would give to small businesses that are trying to, you know, look ahead, is listen to your customer, listen to the industry, and, you know, keep your finger on the pulse about where people are going, because you can't see that far ahead like you used to. It was a slow moving vehicle 10, 15 years ago, you know, with the addition of social media platforms, you know, from traditional more print advertising and that sort of stuff. Whereas it's moving so much faster now that it makes it harder to predict. You can just start to see trends about, you know, people are still looking to engage with more of that raw, authentic. How can I get more to the root of the real? And that's not going to change. And so, you know, the next Clubhouse is probably maybe not even built yet.
Yeah. I'm curious, because you mentioned something that I think is really interesting in knowing your audience, knowing who your customer is, knowing it, like figuring out who the people are. How I would imagine that for some businesses and some organizations that came really easily over the last year, because they probably already knew. Probably others struggled with it for a little bit, but I have to say, I'm still sort of amazed that as I drive between Rochester and Syracuse and Ithaca and even into the Southern Tier, I pretty regularly see different businesses that are still completely devoted to a single medium, as in like in-person sales, for example. And as someone who probably is always trying to figure out what the next thing is in terms of marketing and in terms of just how you can possibly sell your product or move your product. How concerning would that be at this point that for the people who haven't yet made that jump or that transition to, frankly, an almost complete digital focus, given the way people have really leaned into not doing things traditionally as they have over the last two decades?
Yeah. So I said, you know, as soon as we retreated into our homes last year during COVID, my first, you know, thing that I said is going to make a business thrive or die is, can you pivot? Yeah. And I think that, you know, people got so sick of that word that it's, you know, I dread to even say it, but that is, I mean, you're talking about a company that couldn't pivot or refused to pivot, right? And someone is going to eat them. Yeah. Someone is going to come in with a new and different way to think, and they're going to steal some of their sales. And, but not all of them, because some people want that, you know, historic experience that they used to get. So I think it really all comes back to there's something for everyone. And one of the best things that your business can do is stay current, stay in tune with what your customer is looking for, and follow the beat of your own drum too. Because when it comes to in-person and things like that, there's, you know, if you have a pop-up clothing brand, you can still do that. It's an in-person experience. You can do that with COVID safety, COVID safe precautions. And set up, you know, you just need more space than you used to need. Or maybe you add an online component to that pop-up shop that you used to do. And your in-person component is invitation only so that you can keep it small. That new way of thinking where you can still hold on to some of the historic ways that people are used to engaging with your brand and spin it to the new way that people are looking to engage with companies is going to be a really great hybrid mix. And I think that that's something that we'll continue to see.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you is I wanted to do a little word association here. When you think about marketing now and in the future, and I say the word storytelling, what comes to mind and what should be the focus moving out of the pandemic?
People love stories. They always have, they always will. So that's something that's certainly not going to change, you know, pre, during, or post pandemic in my mind. Storytelling's here to stay.
And when you look at the post pandemic world, which post vaccination, hopefully will be in the fall or at least the latter part of this year, what is the one thing that you are most looking forward to getting out and doing? Just as a person, marketing aside.
Honestly, I just want my kids to go back to school full time. That's the biggest thing. I was talking to a friend of mine about that earlier today. I think that they really have it the hardest because my kids are 5 and 6. And so they only have a partial understanding of why this is happening and what's going on. And they get, you know, we've told them about Corona and safety and mask wearing and all of that stuff and why you have to, you know, go to school some days and they go to the YMCA and do remote learning there the rest of the days. So I am really looking forward to them getting the classic experience or a modified experience of what school is with relationships and friendships and, you know, learning new things and finding what you're interested in. That's what I'm most excited to see for my family.
All right, Maureen, appreciate the time. Thank you so much for taking it.
Thanks, Josh.